listening to Tenacity Radio. Real entertainment. No excuses.
Today's show is brought to you by Audible.com. Get yourself a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/The Gut and Bone Show. Over 85,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. So on behalf of Audible and myself, thanks for listening.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur.
Come on!
Or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is the Gut and Bone Show. I'm Gut Wrench, and I'm going to share with you guests and topics that tend to be somewhat obscure from everyday people like you and me. Science, religion, history, paranormal. Sometimes the normal. Those are just some of the subjects that we will talk about.
on the Gut and Bone Show on Tenacity Radio.
Hello, everybody.
Wow.
I don't know about you, but my mic is like really hot. Let me know if you can hear everything okay in the chat room if you have the moments to do so. Otherwise, I will just fall down. Thanks for being here. There's a handful of folks in the chat room. I really do appreciate it. And I know you do too. Last week on the Gut and Bone Show, we were supposed to be talking with Dr. Brooks Adams. And we were supposed to talk about his North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. Fascinating stuff. But he was in that line of storms that went through Alabama the other day and killed all those people. He wasn't in Alabama. He was, you know, slightly to the west of that and was affected by it. So he couldn't get his internets together. But he did commit to coming back on the 22nd. And we will talk about, that's May 22nd, by the way. And we will talk about Inner Earth at that point. And if you want to check out some of the stuff that he does and is into, you can visit npiee.org. And also, just look on my blogs. There's many blogs to choose from. And you all know that. If you frequent WordPress, look for robbywrench.wordpress.com or just Google The Gut and Bone Show. You will find tons of information on The Gut and Bone Show, including information about Dr. Brooks Agnew. Did I say Adams before? I probably did. And for that, I shall...
Ow!
Yes. Let's see, where were we? We were talking about last week's show. And, hang on a second.
Hello, you've reached the Gut and Bone Show. This is Robbie speaking. How can I help you?
Hey, it's Peter! What's going on, buddy?
Hey, Peter, how are you? It's been a long time.
Yeah.
So what is it I could do for you today?
I've been wanting to talk to you about something.
Oh. Okay, then. I guess... Go ahead. We are live on the air, by the way.
Oh, crap.
That's okay. So go ahead, ask me anything.
You know what really grinds my gears? This Lindsay Lohan. Eh? Lindsay Lohan with all those little outfits, jumping around there on stage, half naked with your little outfits. You know? You're up there jumping around, and I'm just sitting here with my beer. So, you know, what am I supposed to do? What do you want? You know, are we gonna go out? Is that what you're trying to, why you leaping around there, throwing those things all up and over there in my face? Huh? What do you want, Lindsay? Tell me what you want!
Is that what you, had called me for?
Yeah!
Well, I probably would have to agree with you, but, I probably shouldn't.
You bastard.
Yeah.
Well, sir, while I may not agree with what you say, I'll defend to the death your right to say it.
Okay. Whoa. Settle down there.
No problem. Come on, let's go drink till we can't feel feelings anymore. Let's not deny our heritages. You're Jewish, you're good with money. I'm Irish, I drink, and I ban homosexuals from marching in my parade.
Look, you're out of hand.
Calm down! Easy now.
Right. Look, I do have to get going here, Peter. I do appreciate you calling in, and,
I am now Peter Griffin, certified CPR.
All right. You're crazy.
Hey! Stop it.
All right. Well, look, I'm going to get going here.
I know. You're a feminist, and I think that's adorable, but this is grown-up time, and I'm the man.
Okay.
Wait a minute. That's the smartest thing I've ever heard anyone say about anything. Oh, no, go ahead and cook anyway, Lois, and we'll throw it out. I don't want you to get rusty.
Do you mind? I really do have to get to going, and I appreciate you calling in and sharing your time with us here on the Gut and Bone Show.
No problem.
All right, well.
I walked into the kitchen and sat down at the table. I looked with a grimace at the questionable meal Lois had placed in front of me. Of course, I'd never tell her how disgusted I was with her cooking, but somehow I think she knew. Lois had always been full of energy and life, but lately I had begun to grow more aware of her aging.
Look.
The bright, exuberant eyes that I had fallen in love with,
Peter,
were now beginning to grow dull.
Peter, I do have to go. I'm sorry. You have a good day.
You are listening to The Gut and Bone Show, live on TenacityRadio.com. Real entertainment, no excuses.
Full of wonder, and the human spirit drives us to explore these things. For some, exploring history, for others, developing sciences. For some people, their human spirit pushes them to explore and share all of these things. And Jeff Belanger is one such individual. Jeff Belanger has participated and written about most things most of us only dream of. But Jeff seems to find a way to share his research and experiences with all of the world. Whether by blogs, magazines, or with any one of his numerous books, Jeff finds a way to bring the unknown and wondrous to the masses. Jeff also is the host of 30 Odd Minutes, which is currently being viewed in over 3 million homes. He is also the founder of GhostVillage.com and has been a guest on more than 200 radio and television programs, including the History Channel, the Travel Channel, PBS, NBCN, Living TV in the UK,
the Maury Show, the CBS News Early Show, Fox, NBC, ABC, and CBS affiliates, National Public Radio, the BBC, Australian Radio Network, and Coast to Coast AM.
Please welcome to the show, Jeff Belanger.
Are you there, Jeff?
I'm here, and thank you for that amazing introduction and the large studio audience clearly gathered.
Yeah, that cost me a pretty penny.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I appreciate you being on the show.
Well, I lost a bet, and it's time to pay.
Oh, man.
I'm just serious. Come on.
Can you hear everything okay?
What?
Because I can adjust some things. It looks like my mic is super hot and yours is in the mediocre range.
Well, I am a mediocre kind of guy. If you move a little to the left, it would be better.
Okay, how's this?
Better. Good.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Now lean forward just a little. Put your right arm in. Put your right arm out. And we're good.
Shake it all about.
Well, you said it, not me.
Well, Jeff, it's an honor to have you on the show. You are all over the place as far as paranormal goes and some other subjects as well. And I am a faithful listener to the Paranormal Podcast, and that's probably where I was first exposed to you.
Oh, cool. Well, I was glad to expose myself to you.
Yes. You also are an author and some other things. Why don't you let the listeners know a little bit about yourself, and then we can get into some of the things that you do.
Yeah, sure. No, I love the paranormal, and I have since I was a kid. And I grew up in New England, and we've got our ghostly legends and stories around here that certainly have been a big part of my life since the childhood. And I investigated my first haunted house when I was 10 years old with a friend who said their house was haunted. And so I went to school to be a writer, and that's really what I wanted to do. And I was writing for newspapers and magazines, and around October you go looking for ghost stories. And that just really evolved from there. I started ghostvillage.com back in 1999. I started writing books. I've written a dozen now. I'm the writer and researcher for the Ghost Adventure series on the Travel Channel. I've been doing that since the first episode, so 5 seasons now. And I get to do lectures all over the country and go to events and investigations. And I pretty much have the coolest job in the world. So for you guys that have been listening to my work and buying my books and watching the shows, I appreciate it. Thank you.
It's awesome. Quite a story. Could I ask, you said you were actively involved with the paranormal pretty young there. Were you brought up in a religious environment?
Yeah, I was raised Catholic. And, there's something about Catholicism, I think, that lends itself a little bit more than, I'm biased, and that's what I was exposed to. But, Catholics have got God, and we've got the devil, and there's angels, and there's demons, and there's these saints, and these saints are, better than the rest of us. We know that, and they're dead. There's this concept of purgatory. Mm-hmm. I actually think the Catholics acknowledge a lot more gray area than maybe other religions, might do. So, I was also raised by a family that was into this stuff. My dad and I used to watch UFO shows, and I was always interested in this topic. I don't think it actually conflicts. There's people that might disagree, but in my particular faith and belief system, it doesn't conflict at all.
Awesome. Very good. So your folks are okay with what you're doing?
Yeah. I mean, they keep telling me I got to get a real job one of these days and try to explain that, I've had those and this is better, but we'll figure it out one day.
Well, being a writer is a good full-time job.
Yeah, it is. It's not a good full-time job. It is a full-time job. A good full-time job is like working for a company with benefits and stuff. And and I did that too. I had that experience. It was kind of cool. After I went bankrupt funding a newspaper when I was right out of college, I started working for an ad agency, and then I was working for a software company. And the software company was this international firm that was sending me all over the world on a 5-star budget. And while I was in Paris and while I was in New Orleans and in Texas, you're not in meetings all day long. I would sneak off and go to haunted places and write about them for my website. So suddenly I looked very worldly, and people were like, how do you afford to do this and go to, go to Paris and write about ghosts? And, the answer is I don't. Someone else was paying for it, fortunately.
Can you talk a little bit about your again, if I'm coming across too hot, let me know, because I don't want to be distorting all over the place. And
you sound fine to me.
Okay, great. You talked about you were 10 years old with your first paranormal experience.
Yeah, actually, I didn't have an experience back then. What was happening is I had friends that said, our house is haunted. And it was this old, 200-year-old historic home. And so we'd have a sleepover and would bring over the Ouija board and try to make contact. And I was so intrigued, because this wasn't like a Hollywood ghost story. It wasn't, the beds levitate and our heads spin around and, we're all possessed or whatever. It was just, yeah, someone else lives here with us. And even my friend's parents would just shrug and say, yeah, we think someone's haunting the place. And so we'd have the Ouija board out, and we believed we were making contact anyway. And that's really what got me hooked. I also grew up in the town next to Ed and Lorraine Warren. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're old-time ghost hunters, been doing it for like 50 years. And I remember seeing their lectures when I was, 10, 12, 15 years old, again and again. And certainly that had an influence as well. So I didn't see anything back when I was 10, but I believed. I believed my friend. I believed his family. And really wanted to know more, and started a lifelong interest.
Right. How about, have you ever experienced anything?
I have. And I've had, you can count on one hand, every time, the amount of times that I think something definitive happened to me. And it really didn't happen. You know, I really came at this topic as a journalist first, you know, just the facts, both sides. Let me, you know, look at all sides of the issue and see where we end up. And I kind of lost my objectivity back in 2003 when I was in the catacombs of Paris, France. And I had my first bona fide ghost experience, what I believe to be a ghost experience. And quite frankly, that's all I got is my own opinion to counsel on this one. And so I'm down there alone. I'm surrounded by 6 million human skeletons. Very, you know, low light, and I see this shadow the size of a man move right in front of me in this narrow hallway lined with human skulls everywhere, and time slows down when that occurs. You know, everything just slowed to a crawl. My brain is running through this checklist of, okay, what could it be? Am I overtired? No, it's 10:30 in the morning. You know, am I of sound mind and body? Am I down here alone? Absolutely alone. You'd have to literally bump into me to get by me. You know, could it be a little mouse casting a great big shadow? No, the lighting's up top. It's not at the bottom. You know, and you run through everything. And when you run out of possibilities, you know, you say to yourself, oh, my God, if that's not a ghost, I can't ever explain what that was. And even now, I mean, that event was so seared into my permanent memory. I can close my eyes right now and relive it. And that's when I really lost my objectivity. I mean, I wasn't calling anybody a liar before 2003. But at the same time, it was, okay, you know, these are stories, these are this, these are that, maybe some people are fooling themselves, and they are. I mean, that does account for some of these experiences, but not all of them, because my senses, my sense of sight and sound and touch and everything are no better than anybody else's. I trust my senses, as do other people, and you have this event, and it's life-changing, because all that stuff, you know, all that stuff you got in church or in synagogue or mosque or what your parents told you, All of that stuff, all those stories go beyond theory all of a sudden. You're like, whoa, well, if something happens after we die, what else might be true? And it's really, it's quite an amazing spiritual quest when you go looking for this stuff. You know, you're talking about deeply spiritual, deeply personal questions that you ponder when you go looking for things that bump in the night. And who'd have thought that I would have found my faith not in a church or at some revival meeting or anything like that? I would have found it surrounded by 6 million dead people.
That's very interesting. That's a very interesting story, and also a very interesting perspective to, you know, your faith and how it has. Most people are a little bit reluctant to say that they are still religious once they start doing the paranormal thing, you know?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, believe me, religion probably isn't quite the right word for me. I don't subscribe to a particular religion anymore, but I recognize that being raised Catholic and doing the whole thing, confirmation, mm-hmm. and week after week, and you know, that will always be a part of me. And for a while, you know, in college, I almost became an atheist. I was so disenfranchised with the Catholic Church. I was bitter about this and about that, and I've really lightened up over the years and realized, you know, there's a lot of things they do well. There's a lot of people that take good comfort in these large religious institutions, and blessed are those who find their spirituality within large religious institutions, because there's a whole support structure there. I mean, you know, if you're Jewish and that's where you find your comfort and faith and spirituality, you've got temples and rabbis and all kinds of, you know, great people to help you along with your faith, and same with Christianity and Islam and everything else. But boy, you know, ghost hunting, that's wide open, and at the end of the day, I kind of think, you know, it really is this individual quest anyway. So why not find it with an EMF meter in the middle of you know, some haunted battlefield on a dark and stormy night, you know, talking to people who've had these profound life-changing ghost encounters, and why not try to have that experience again? You know, once it happens, it's frightening, it's amazing, it's life-changing, but it also, to some degree, it's very addicting. I want it to happen again.
So is it safe to say that you can thank religion a little bit for your strong interest in it today?
Oh, of course, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, every event in my life has gone into making me who I am today. All the good stuff, all the bad stuff, the people I've met, the conversations I've had, you know, with so many folks now. Every person you meet changes you just a little bit. You know, some people change you a lot. You know, and so no regrets. No, I'm glad. I wouldn't change a thing if I could go back, for sure.
So you have a great attitude. That's awesome.
Well, I've been drinking a lot.
I have my doubts. I failed to mention at the beginning of my show there, just to digress slightly. I last week on the show, I mentioned that the last typewriter printing company was closed, and I made a mistake. Apparently, that wasn't true, so I needed to correct myself before I forgot.
No, I'm glad we cleared that up. The world needs typewriters.
Yeah, they're still making them.
Nothing like not being able to cut and paste entire paragraphs.
Let alone get the drivers for it.
I still have this. When I was, 10 years old and doing those sleepovers, I got so interested in this. I started reading books, Brad Steiger and Hans Holzer. That's what, we had back then. And I still have one. It's a typewritten business card, typewriter, to show my age a little bit. And it says, Jeff, Supernatural Investigator, and it had my home phone number on it, which is really ridiculous because in reality, I really would have only given that to people who already knew my phone number anyway, so it was totally not necessary at age 12 to have a business card, but I still have it.
Supernatural Investigator.
That's right. Now it's Paranormal Investigator. I've diversified.
What were the reasons that you went with Supernatural? Is it because paranormal wasn't a word, or...?
No. I think supernatural, to me anyway, being an English major geek and all that, really has to do more with spirituality, more of the ghostly, angelic realm. Mm-hmm. Whereas paranormal, I've come to love all things paranormal, not just ghosts, but the legends of Bigfoot and aliens and monsters and everything. I think it's all interconnected more than anyone would like to admit.
Yeah, even today, as I talk about my show, I try to avoid the word paranormal. It seems to categorize you, whether you're...
As a kook?
Yeah, or something.
How dare you, sir? How dare you call me that?
Yeah, I get told that often, why don't you go out and chase your ghosts, and all I do is talk to people, occasional people that do this kind of thing, but supernatural seems to make sense.
Yeah, no, and it's, because... It also can be a religious term, people who believe they have supernatural experiences, finding Jesus, finding their angels or whatever. So, and that's cool. That interests me as well, because it's all of this stuff we're talking about, whether it's aliens or Bigfoot or whatever. It's all a human experience. You need the human. This stuff, I don't believe exists or can exist without the human. We're an integral element. And while you may call this stuff fringe experiences, and I accept that, that's more interesting to me. I'd rather talk about the rare fringe experiences than, the stuff that happens to us all the time. Let the psychologists deal with all that, your mother issues and everything else. Call me when, there's demons coming out of your wall or aliens beaming through your roof.
Well, that could go two ways. Parapsychology is seemingly getting more popular.
Yeah, not academically, unfortunately, but calling oneself a parapsychologist certainly seems to be more popular.
So aren't there actually some institutions offering these classes?
There are, but they're very few and far between. And departments got the Ryan Institute with Duke University, mm-hmm. It's the one we all pointed to again and again. But that's spun off now. Princeton, closed their. Their research lab a few years ago. It's too bad, because the reality is no one wants to touch this stuff. And my sister's a psychologist, PhD, the whole bit, accredited university. She went to Fordham, very proud of her and all that. And I've talked to her and I said, come on, let's pretend that ghosts, that ghosts aren't for real. It doesn't matter, because your patients are perceiving them as real, and you have to deal with that. As that person's psychologist, ghosts are a reality to millions and millions of people all over the world. And I said, so why not talk about it that way, or at least talk about the possibility? And she gave me such an honest answer. She's like, you're right. However, if psychologists start talking about ghosts, we set ourselves back 100 years, and we're just now starting to get some legitimacy and get accepted as a real science and everything else. We just can't afford it. And isn't that too bad? Isn't it a shame that psychologists aren't free to explore all the possibilities. Now, working with some family cases, I have brought in psychologists who are open-minded and at least accept the fact that, you know, talking about parapsychology, you know, we were working on this one case, and the family was saying when the mom and dad fight and really fight, that's when stuff starts flying around the room and breaking. And, well, isn't that interesting? You know, could we be looking at PK phenomena or psychokinesis where the person isn't even aware they're doing it, but there's so much rage that it's manifesting in the environment and shattering dishes? I mean, as a psychologist, oh my God, wouldn't you want a ringside seat for that?
Right, right.
And believe me, and I know a few that do, and that's why they're happy to come and help along on some of these things, because, you know, it takes all that stuff that's in theory and moves it into practice.
There's a guy in the chat room. His name is Low Battery Dave. He's making quite a few comments, and
An Irish name?
Low Battery. It may be. I don't know. We could ask him. But he's making some comments. He had a question. Let me scroll back here. It says here, we were talking about the religious aspects, you know, and how it was affecting you. And he asked, but should religion and the paranormal really be combined?
Should religion and the paranormal? That's a good question. Probably not. They probably wouldn't play well together. You know, they'd fight over toys and stuff. I think that in reality, if you're going to be religious, then you're going to have to subscribe to a religion. And religions have their rules. And that's what makes them a specific religion, you know, and that's cool. The rule is, you know, if you're a Christian, you have to accept that Jesus is the savior of the world. If you're, you know, if you're other religions, you have to believe in other things. Those are the rules. If you don't want to play by those rules, then you really can't be a part of that religion. So to some degree, the reason that I think they belong together and do often get mixed up is because when someone has an experience that they can't explain any other way, the first thing they're going to do is reach into their luggage. And their luggage is everything that goes into making them who they are. And a big part of that for a lot of people is their religion. Well, I was raised Baptist. I was raised Muslim. I was raised Hindu. And so when I see something that doesn't make any sense, like, you know, grandma died a month ago, yet she's standing in front of me right now, I have to go to my religion. That's the best I can do, is what does my religion say about this? So that's why they often do get mixed together, because the belief system of the eyewitness, they're always going to default to what they know. And what they know is how they were brought up and their level of education, what mom and dad told them is real and not real and all of that stuff. So, I like to keep them separate because I think this stuff exists no matter what you believe, but I respect and accept that we're always going to have to work from the belief system of the eyewitness. So they're going to always, you know, they're never going to get too far apart.
Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to find out in the end that religion was the masking part of our lives that kept us from the paranormal.
Well, you know, I often, you know, the whole chicken and the egg thing, you know, the earliest forms of religion were actually ancestor worship. This was long before there were multiple deities and long before you worshiped the sky god or the moon god or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
People reached out to their ancestors. And I always asked, well, why would they think to do that unless maybe some people saw ghosts? Maybe people saw grandma who they know died a couple weeks ago, and yet here she is, you know, transcending even death now. And they had to come up with some kind of system to explain that. And maybe that system has since evolved, maybe, into, you know, all the big religions we know today and the small religions we know today.
Yep, definitely. We were talking about your experiences. Now, I know you said you had a few. When I've been on a mini ghost hunt. That's about as far as my experience goes with any investigation type of thing, you know.
Well, it is young, so hang in there.
Well, I'll be honest. I'm really not that enthralled by it. Not for any reason other than I see enough people doing it, and it just seems like it's not getting anywhere, but that's my opinion.
Oh, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to know if you've had an encounter or an experience or even a meter registering something that really made you aware that that you're on the right track, or whoever is investigating is possibly on the right track?
See, for me, it's not about the equipment, meters, or otherwise. I really don't use that stuff anymore. I did years ago, and then I kind of realized that in many cases, this stuff is just a substitute for the human experience. So what interests me is when I see something or feel something or hear something that I can't explain any other way. Now, I recognize people who are science-minded and data collection-minded hate that because there's no take-home on it. But for me, I've watched too many people fool themselves with some of this gear. You know, I mean, an EMF meter, an electromagnetic force meter goes off. Well, guess what? We live on a giant magnet. It's called Earth. You know, there's always waves moving around, and all kinds of things can set these things off and give us false positives. So, you know, I've yet to be convinced that some of this stuff truly is bridging the gap. But I also understand that the ghost hunter's belief, the person using that equipment's belief, plays a large role. Like I said earlier, you can't remove the human from this equation. So really, I've kind of evolved into something I like to call legend tripping, which is I hear about a legend, whether it be, you know, monsters lurk here or aliens land here or ghosts haunt here, and I just want to put myself into that story. I want to walk in and see what I see, experience what I experience. And, you know, I do this all the time. I've been in tons and tons of haunted places now. And like I said, it's happened, you can count on one hand. But when it happens, it's just, wow. I mean, big, big stuff, you know, and unforgettable experiences that keep me going and keep me doing this again and again and lets me know that I'm on the right track. I can't speak for anyone else, and I can't really help anyone else. All I can do is my own thing and try to come up with my own answers. And while I'm doing that, I'm happy to pass it all along to, you know, there's nothing to hide. I'll pass along anything I know along the way. But I feel like I'm getting somewhere, and that's what's important.
Very interesting. So that's what the legend tripping thing is all about, trying to get away from I don't know what. There's a certain thing that comes with a paranormal investigator when you say that, or, you know, when you say that, people think a certain thing. Legend tripping is totally a different, it makes you think in a different way, totally. And it doesn't have to be just, you know, cryptozoology. It doesn't have to be just ghost hunting. It doesn't have to be whatever else there is that's paranormal, you know, ufology. There's some other things involved.
Yeah. No, I mean, here's the thing. The story and the human are integral to any legend. Now, when I use the word legend, I found that actually offends some people. They're saying, "Oh, what are you saying? It's just a, you know, it's just a legend. It's just a story." And no. There are legend doesn't mean untrue or anything else. It just means it's become bigger than itself. And there are living legends. There are actors, musicians, athletes who we would call legends. You know, they're so good that the story of them is bigger than the actual athlete. You know what I mean? I mean, Michael Jordan is a living legend. I mean, one of the, you know, greatest basketball players of all time. There's been no one like him before or since. So we would call him a legend, though he's still very much alive and doing underwear commercials. So these legends are what draw us in. We all hear a story that we want to check out. And subconsciously, and although some of us quite consciously, we want to become part of that story. So if I hear a building is haunted, say, you know, Mansfield Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio, where I was just a couple weeks ago, you know, you hear a story about this very haunted prison in Ohio, and I want to go there. I want to put myself into the building. I want to talk to the people that have had experiences, and I want to see if I have something to add to it. I may come home and say, man, I was there. It's all hype. You know, I didn't see or feel anything. Or, oh my God, this stuff is for real. I did see stuff. I did hear stuff. And that's, I mean, that's what legend tripping is all about, is getting yourself into the story and making your own decisions.
Hey, we're kind of segueing into your book there. Do you want to talk about it?
No.
Okay.
A recent book I wrote is called Picture Yourself Legend Tripping. And basically, it's just, you know, years of doing this now, and I've tagged along with many a ghost hunting group and other paranormal investigators. I kind of wanted to bring the joy and the fun back to it. You know, a lot of us got interested in this as kids because we loved sneaking out. We loved hearing that, you know, if you knock three times on that headstone in the moonlight, you know, the ghost comes out, and trying it, you know, maybe that would really work. And so I was just trying to bring the fun back into the paranormal, for myself anyway. And the message really resonated with a lot of people in my lectures and stuff, just saying, hey, you know what, if you want to be a legend tripper, you know, here's how you get inducted. You just say to yourself, I'm a legend tripper, and you're in. That's all it takes.
I just like the title. I think it sounds great. For some reason, I think of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in that movie, I Am Legend.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why I go to that, but...
Legends, the story is so powerful. It's the thing that we pass on from one person to another. It's a deep human connection. You know, when we share these stories with each other, when you pull someone aside who you trust and say, whoa, I went to this haunted place, or I went to a UFO landing site, or I had this incredible life-changing experience, you don't just tell that to anybody. You tell that to someone you trust and you hope won't judge you. So you pass that on, and it's a binding thing. It binds one person to another. It's a direct connection with each other. It's a connection with our past. You know, you're appreciating something very specific. You know, I live in a town now where we've got Home Depot and McDonald's and Walmart, and in many respects, it's lost an awful lot of character. But we have this old haunted library in town. It's about a 100-year-old building, and it's the former library now, and it's said to be haunted by an old librarian. And that legend belongs to our little town, and no other town in the world has it. It's ours. Tons of other towns have Walmart and McDonald's and Home Depot and all that other stuff. Nobody has this. And towns and communities can become very possessive and protective of their legends, and proud of them too. You know, share them with someone who's worthy. You know, if we smell for a minute that we think you're going to mock us for believing that old building's haunted, we might, you know, pull back and not want to talk to you. It's really unique. It's unique to communities, to towns, to people. There's a real interconnectedness here that can't be overstated.
Very nice. So the Legend Tripping, that's a book that's available.
Yeah, you can get it wherever, you know, Barnes & Noble or Amazon, or, you know, you can go search for it online. Picture yourself Legend Tripping. It comes with a DVD, and just, I got to interview some great people and talk about some great stories, but it's really, how do we find them? Because, you know, it's not just, you don't have to go to the catacombs of Paris to find some haunted place. You know, like I said, there's this little old building in my town that's, you know, supposed to be haunted. They're in your town, too. There's... You know, my gosh, you're in Ohio. You've got the Ohio Grass Man, which is a wonderful legend. You've got all kinds of things that, you know, get out there. Test the legend. Don't take anyone's word for it. Go make your own judgment. And that's really what it's about.
So you say you've been investigating since you were 10, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I took a good long break in there, you know, when I was a teenager and going to high school and stuff, but... And then I came back to it in college as a reporter, but that's still kind of investigating. And then I did the whole paranormal investigation thing in the early 2000s. You know, I was with groups and different things, and I kind of evolved into, like I said, this whole legend tripping thing, where it's really, you don't need a group. It can just be yourself. I mean, you want to be safe, of course, and you don't want to trespass and get arrested. None of that's any fun, but. But yeah, so I've been doing that and looking into this stuff for years and years.
Well, Low Battery Dave asked another question, and it pertains to this subject. And do you think that sensationalism promotes bad research in the paranormal? That would be his question.
Oh, Dave. yeah, sure. I mean, of course it does. And reality TV, you know, all of that stuff. It's a blessing and a curse. The good news is, because the subject is so wildly popular right now, we're out of the closet. And so it's okay to talk about this stuff by the office water cooler now, where really just 10 years ago, that's nothing, you know. People would really ridicule you. You could worry about getting fired and things like that for talking about ghosts and haunted places and Bigfoot at the office water cooler, depending on your office, I guess. But the good news is, because it's out of the closet, you're allowed to have open discussions like never before, which is great. You know, I'm all for the discussion. The downside is some people, and by the way, you know, this isn't new. There's always been charlatans in the paranormal. There's been fake psychics. There's been so many things. But maybe when people think that they have an opportunity to get their own television show and they have the chance to maybe make some money, and there's very little money in this field, so that's really ridiculous. That the sensationalism, that the celebration of just the story is definitely going to lead people down a bad path, or you know, way more false positives than ever before.
Right, right. Well, this will lead me to my question that I've been itching to ask you since you've agreed to be on the show. And I watched that when I first started my show, I was on Blog Talk, and it was actually like the week before I started. The Ghost Adventures, that was a live lockdown for, I think it was 7 hours or something.
I remember.
And you were there. You were in on it. You were monitoring some cameras in the chat room, I think. I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was there as kind of like the... I've worked on that show since the first episode as their writer and researcher and historian. And yeah, it's been a great experience. But go ahead. Ask your question. Well, I was indeed on that.
Well, my question centers around Robert Bess. I think that was Robert Bess. Okay. Didn't take you long to understand what I was going to ask you.
Go ahead.
Well, what did he throw that thing on purpose?
Well, I have no idea. I have no idea. If you saw the video, you have as much information as I did because I was not in the room when it happened. But it sure looked to me like he threw it. When we played it over and over and over in slow motion, it looked like he threw it. I didn't really know Robert Bess before that, and I've had no contact with him since then. But I was proud of the way that everybody handled that when it happened, because being in the control room, you know, we all saw it. We said, whoa, what just happened? Now, here's the thing. We had that place wired up 8 ways to Sunday. There were cameras in every corner. Nothing was going down in that building without it being captured. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as it happened, you know, we were in a control room, and we could say, hey, we want to see the replay. And the folks in the booth right away said, yeah, you're not going to like it. And so we said, well, let's see it. We saw it, and we said, everybody looked at each other like, boy, it sure looks like he threw it. Now, he swears to this day he didn't, but it looks like what it looks like. And I was very proud that they made the decision, let's show the audience. The audience saw it. They're not stupid. Mm-hmm. Let's put it out there. Let's just replay it again and say, you be the judge. And that's exactly what we did. And me not being inside Robert Bess's body, I can't promise you that it wasn't made to look like he threw it. But my opinion, having seen the same thing you did, is that it looks like he threw it.
Yeah, it was hard to find any information on the guy. Limited information out there on him. But so that made it come to my mind that perhaps that whole that machine that he had there and some of the gadgets he was using, as well as himself, was kind of placed there in case things weren't, you know, hot enough, that they could just open up that floodgate and he could cause some drama for the show.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, I mean, I get all sides of it. It was an interesting thing. We didn't know a lot about him at the time, just that he had made this claim that, hey, this machine can suck in, trap, and you can see ghosts. And I had heard him say it before. He had sent me an email like a year before, you know, looking for people to come film it and stuff. And then I kind of forgot about him until that live show. So why not? You know, why not try different things? If someone makes a wild claim, I say give them the rope. If they choose to hang themselves with it, then so be it. And if they shine, then how cool is it that you broke the story? You kind of can't lose.
That thing was pretty cool, though, especially the way it was going off. It certainly did seem like something was about to happen, or it did happen, and we just didn't notice it.
Yeah, it was. Well, it was loud and flashy, and I think it had a Tesla coil, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of energy floating around the room. I know we experimented with a Tesla coil at the Stanley Hotel in Colorado a few months ago. And, you know, this Bill Chappell, who's an inventor that makes a lot of stuff for paranormal, you know, people interested in paranormal, he had this Tesla coil going, and he handed me, you know, like the fluorescent tube lights that you put in those, you know, long tubes?
Sure.
So he hands me one, and keep in mind, it's not connected to anything. He says, here, walk toward me. And as I walk toward him, the thing lights up.
Right.
I mean, there's that much energy, you know, spitting out of this Tesla coil, and I'm thinking, you know, Bill, is this safe? My hand is holding a lit up light, and there's no things connected to it. That's just in the air right now. And, you know, he's kind of laughing at me, and I'm like, I'm getting, you know, 10,000 gigawatts going through my brains right now, aren't I? I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to forget my name and urinate myself every time the microwave goes off. But you know, hey, if the theory is spirits or whatever feed off of electromagnetic energy, then, you know, sometimes maybe if you set out a buffet, something will happen.
I have to say, though, I was really moved by the whole show. I thought they gave 120% everybody that was involved. Even the Robert Best part was awesome. I think it really added a lot of drama to the whole ghost hunting aspect. I really liked the evidence, even though it was somewhat limited, but they got evidence. They used some new gadgets. They showed everybody doing what they do, you know, live and on the air. And there were, the really cool part was people at home were kind of interacting and able to leave their comments. So,
yeah.
And you did relate the comments live on the air. I thought for sure we were going to see more shows doing things like that. And I know Taps tried to do something at Buffalo Central Terminal up in New York, and it didn't seem to come over nearly as well.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's a great show too, and I know those folks. And, you know, here's what's cool. Like, they have a different style and a different approach to the paranormal, and that's the beauty of it. You know, nobody's right and nobody's wrong. It's just your own style, your own way of doing things, and they're two entirely different TV shows, and hey, you know, why not watch them both?
Right. Yeah, I don't have, you know, I understand that a lot of it is dramatized because it is for TV and they got to pay the bills and stuff like that. A lot of folks don't, and they use that as a tool to degrade the teams that are on TV and stuff like that.
You know. Sure. Yeah, no, and I get that too. But here's the other thing you have to understand, and I can speak more from Ghost Adventures just because I've worked with the show for years. You know, first of all, let's just take the lockdown. Forget all the rest of it. When they go into the investigation, each of them has a camera. Plus, they'll plant, you know, four or five what they call X cams, which are cameras that just run all night. So if you're in there for roughly 10 hours, and you have five cameras that run 10 hours, that's now 50 hours of footage. And then you got three guys with cameras. Let's say they're not running all the time though. So let's say they only have 7 hours. 7 hours times three is another 21. So you know, 70 hours of footage that has to come down to a show that's really 44 minutes once you, you know, add in the commercials. That's really all an hour-long show is. And then of that, really 22 of it is the investigation. So 70 hours down to 22 minutes. We're not going to waste the viewer's time with the hour-long stretches where nothing happens.
Right.
You know, like that would be horribly boring. You know, I've talked to people who are like, man, we should do a show about what paranormal investigations really like. And I always laugh and I'm like, I wouldn't watch that. That would be the most boring thing ever. It would be us getting batty and throwing, you know, Skittles at each other while we wait for something to happen. You know, the reality is that's the formula. You can sit there for hours and hours and nothing can happen. But all of a sudden, there's these brief moments that get really exciting. And it's the reason you sit there all night.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty much the way it is with any of the reality shows. You know, they don't show you everything, although you can access the behind the scenes or the edited out scenes, you know, via a $10 a month fee.
Oh, okay, really?
Yeah, you know, like Big Brother and stuff like that.
Do they do that?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a fee, but I do know they have you know, deleted scenes and behind the scenes things that you could pay for to watch, you know.
Oh, that's funny. Wow, I should send a memo up, see if we could do that, get away with that. I know Travel Channel does post behind the scenes stuff on their website. It's free though. I mean, they don't charge anything for that. But yeah, you know, it's a television show, and it's also it's a portrayal of stuff that people do. And you know, television has to entertain. It has to be interesting. And so that's always the challenge, especially when you're a paranormal purist. And as am I, but also I understand the power of storytelling. And, you know, we talked earlier about the upsides and the downsides of that. And, you know, the upside is we take it out of the closet and people get to talk about it.
Right. Your show, 30-odd minutes.
Yes, speaking of the most important television show ever.
I checked out a few episodes today, and I like the format.
Well, thank you.
I watched you do the investigation of the Victorian mansion.
Yes, in Gardner, Massachusetts. That was fun. See, what we do is it's mainly a studio show, and we go Tuesday nights at 8. It's public access. It's so low budget. It's practically no budget. We fund it all ourselves. We don't get paid. We don't make any money doing it. We can't take advertising, which is actually kind of cool because it strips all that out and makes it, you know, pure. It's just about the love of the subjects. And so in the studio show, it's live, straight through, 30 minutes, no editing, no nothing. We hope for the best. And once in a while, we do these location shoots, and the Victorian mansion is one of them. But the way we keep that energy is that we go through and we roll the camera for 30 straight minutes. We don't edit. We don't cut. It's just camera on, and here's a ghost tour. Here's an interview. Here's basically a rolling talk show throughout the house. And those are often a lot of fun to do because, you know, anything can happen, and there's no going back. If you flub a line, if you trip and fall down the stairs, you got to get up and keep going.
Right. That's great. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, thanks. No, it's been so much fun to do that. And, gosh, we're doing our 60th episode tomorrow night. So, been doing it for a while.
That's really awesome. And you do it does broadcast on quite a few different outlets.
So, how it works is, you know, we stream it online, and it's broadcast on a couple cable systems in Massachusetts, and then within 24 hours, it's we upload it. It's available for free on iTunes. You can subscribe or download any of the episodes for free. We put it up on Blip TV, and then put it on our website, so you can watch any of the old episodes also for free. And then it goes out to a network of dozens of other cable stations all across the country that play it. So, you know, between all of them, it's available in over 3 million homes now. And we've built like this kind of grassroots fan base of oddballs that are just awesome. People sending us emails and, you know, stories and video segments. It's just been really fun to be a part of it and just talk about this subject just for the pure love of it.
Well, there's somebody in the chat room that feels that they can't get it at home.
You can go 30oddminutes.com and you can watch it for free or download it from iTunes for free, for free, for free. It's all free.
So let's suppose I'm associated with a specific network and I was interested in streaming your show. What would I have to do?
First of all, it's public access network. So all you have to do is ask. There's a website called pegmedia.org, which is for public access, public educational and government stations. And, you know, every town, every cable system has one, and lots of them don't have much content. So you can go to Peg Media, register for free, and you can download full-resolution versions of the show and put them on your station for free, as well as many other shows, for that matter. They have hundreds up there on all kinds of subjects. There's this whole network. It's so funny. It's like underground television. You know, there's all these people out there making these TV shows. Same as we are on all kinds of topics and subjects, and doing it just for the love of it. And there's really great content available out there.
That's awesome. Yeah, I really like the format. I really do. And it's a half hour, and you guys can tell when you're watching that you guys are trying to squeeze as much as you can in that 30 minutes, and it's great.
You know, we get compliments. People tell us like, "Oh, it should be 60-odd minutes," and you know, better that than someone saying, "You know, how about 15-odd minutes?" That seems like plenty for you guys.
30 minutes is perfect. It's perfect. Keeps them hungry, and they'll come back next time.
Yeah, that's the thought. And also, you know, it's tricky to do, you know, technically. And then we also go out for beer after every single show, and so quite frankly, 30 minutes is about as long as I can go without knowing that beer's at the other end, and you know, got to get onto it.
You have a Facebook account?
I have an author page. If you just search for my name, it comes up somewhere.
Okay. Very good. I particularly liked how when you came into the Victorian mansion, you came in and there were like people in there doing things that investigators would do. And it was kind of like you were walking by and the people watching can witness what they're doing. You describe a little bit, let them talk about what they're doing, and then move along. And in between the different investigators, you talked with the house owner about the home and stuff like that. It was really cool.
Yeah, thanks. No, it was, you know, very little planning and a lot of brute force and ignorance. And it was, you know, it's just so much fun because I work with awesome people that also love it because no one's getting paid. It's just, we love getting together and doing it and just having our ball with it. So, and it's really cool how it's grown. It'll be our 2-year anniversary this month, and just, you know, lots more shows planned and we all have a good time. And until it's not fun, we're going to keep doing it.
Excellent. Okay. If you don't mind, we could take a quick little break and come back.
Sounds good.
You could take get yourself something to drink or something. We'll be about 4 minutes or so.
All right.
Okay, we'll be right back, folks. Just don't go away.
Hello, this is Tara.
Hello, this is Joe. We are the editors of VisionsMagazineOnline.com.
The premier source of paranormal reporting based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Direct and in-depth interviews and film reviews that you will find nowhere else.
We have exclusive YouTube broadcasts, Rate the Psychic, and Ask the Shaman.
We ask the questions that no one else will, and we get you the answers first.
Come and explore the paranormal with us here at VisionsMagazineOnline.com.
For the listeners of the Gut and Bone Show, Audible is offering a free audiobook download along with a free 14-day trial for you to check out their service. What is Audible, you ask? Audible is your destination for the widest selection of digital audiobooks available for download. You'll find books on business, the classics, you'll find books for teens and kids. You'll find arts and entertainment, comedy. You'll even find the newspapers and magazines and nostalgia radio. You name it. If it's readable, it's Audible. History is my favorite, and we've talked about that before. But this week, I'm going to talk to you about Edgar Cayce on the Millennium, written by Jess Stern and narrated by Alyssa Bresnahan. More than 6 decades ago, Edgar Cayce, the world's greatest psychic, looked forward to the Millennium. Not with trepidation, but with hope. What did this remarkable prophet see for the new age? Having predicted long before scientists such phenomena as global warming and advances in communication, Cayce believed that we can harness extraordinary spiritual powers within ourselves, and that by changing our lives, we will change the world around us. This was a great book. I loved it, and I know you will too. If you've got a commute to and from work, there's nothing like Audible. And if you're at home and just sitting around getting some sun or something like that, there's nothing like Audible in your ears, your companion. Simply go to www.audibletrial.com/The Gut and Bone Show and get yourself a free audiobook download as well as a 14-day trial. All free. And on behalf of Audible and myself, thanks for listening.
I'm feeling
we're back. Are you there, Jeff?
I'm here.
Excellent. I hope that wasn't too rude.
What was too rude? Did you have gas?
Well, that's never rude, is it?
Well, in an elevator it is.
Oh. No, I meant the music. The music was pretty heavy, and I didn't want to offend you with it.
No, it takes a lot more than that.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You kidding? I've seen things that people write books about.
Someone's asking in the chat room to ask you about the ghosts of the White House.
The ghosts of the White House. The White House is a pretty awesome place. And have you ever been there?
No, but I would love it.
It's you can still visit. It's trickier than it was pre-September 11th, but citizens are still allowed to visit. You got to submit to a background check and all that fun stuff. But I called the White House a few years ago, and I said, hey, I want to write a book about the ghosts of the White House. And they said, yeah, we're really not interested. And I said, but it's a children's book, nonfiction, and I think we can use the ghostly legends as kind of an innovative way to teach history. And they said, go on. And I went, all right. I have you now. So actually, with some help from my congressman, I got to go down there. I interviewed some of the staff and got a tour of the White House. And it's just, it's an amazing place. And the ghostly legends go back, oh God, 150 years now, as far as, you know, documented sightings. And the first one I found was actually Mary Todd Lincoln in a letter to her sister saying that her her son Willie, who died in the White House of a typhoid-like disease, comes to her at night and lets them and was communicating with her. And you could say, and if you know anything about history, Mary Todd Lincoln was a strange duck, to be sure. And you could say, well, distraught mother, you know, wishing that her dead son was still around, and that's all well and good. But then decades later, in the first couple of years of the 1900s, a military aide writes in his memoirs that while visiting the White House, some of the staff, some of the servants were telling him that it's haunted by a little boy. And they never mentioned Willie Lincoln, who was the only little boy to die there. So the ghosts come up again and again. Harry S. Truman wrote about the ghosts like six or seven times in letters to his wife. Ronald Reagan talked about how his dog would bark wildly. You know, by the Lincoln bedroom. And then you have the people who work there at present day, you know, claiming, well, weird things happen. You know, this is the White House. This isn't some creepy old restaurant, you know, in colonial Virginia. This isn't some, you know, some weird building where they give ghost tours. It's the White House. Nothing's supposed to happen unless it's checked and double-checked. And when you talk about the credibility of witnesses, the people who work for that building, and there's about 100 of them, where it doesn't matter who's president, you know, these are the folks that the cleaning crew, the butlers, the groundskeepers, these are people that have a job regardless of which political party's in power. You know, these people are some of the most credible witnesses ever. Now, the president could be on drugs and he could be delusional and crazy and all this other stuff, because we don't drug test the president, unfortunately. but
don't tell Donald Trump that.
Yeah, I know. What's he gonna do? But here's the thing. But the people who work there, they're drug screened, psych screened, they're background checked 8 ways to Sunday because they're around the first family, they're around foreign heads of state. So if that person says, "Hey, I'm walking down the hall and I see Abe Lincoln sitting outside the Lincoln bedroom," it's the most credible witness you can possibly find. And these stories come up again and again in every administration. You know, Michelle Obama just had said something to the Los Angeles Times, gosh, like a month or so ago, about how some of her relatives feel like there's something else up there with them. So these things come up again and again, and I wrote a children's book about it, and it did really well. It's a beautiful book, fully illustrated and color and everything, and we're actually working on a second edition of it that'll come out next year. And just what a great place to be, steeped in history. And an amazing place.
Oh, I'd love to hang out there for a while. I really would. Now, you mentioned the children's book. That is a paranormal book?
It is. It's a book for kids. It was middle readers, so ages, you know, 9 and up. I've written a few children's books, but that was my first one.
Now, what's the title?
Who's Haunting the White House?
Very good.
Yeah.
Would this be why Ursula Bielski asked you to write the foreword of her book?
Probably. That and I owed her a favor. No, I'm kidding. Ursula's great. She's an awesome resource out there in Chicago, and I've known her for years, and I've done one of her conferences before, and we're doing another one this October, so I can't wait to get back to Chicago there in October.
I think it's great that folks like yourself are writing books for the younger folks. What's the age range for those books?
That one was ages 9, you know, 9 to middle readers. I say 9 and up because I know I've, a lot of adults read it and enjoyed it too. So, you know, no need to rule anybody out. But really, you know, ages 9 and older. And when I was growing up interested in this stuff, there really weren't books for young readers on the paranormal. We just had to, you know, get our way through Hans Holzer and Brad Steiger and the Warrens and things like that. So, you know, I'm glad to see the publishers are responding to the, you know, to the gap in the market.
Mm-hmm. I think it's great you do that. I really do. Because there's some issues with that, you know, parents treating their children, you know, unjustly or just plain old wrong because they have these, you know, these feelings or they see things and, you know, some are even put on medication, and it's just kind of heartbreaking, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. And the reality, too, is that, you know, ghosts have also gone pop culture, and pop culture affects us all. And children are exposed to it. They're interested. And so, you know, why not give them a book that says, well, you don't have to believe in ghosts, but here's a bunch of presidents who did and believe the White House were haunted. And, you know, this is one of the most historic buildings on the planet. So... and it is an innovative way to teach history. You know, you can't know anything about a ghost unless you set the stage for him, and you set the stage by understanding the history behind it, by knowing what took place in a location, who was there, who lived there, who died there, why did they die there, and you know, walls can talk. They really can. They have stories to tell. We just gotta, you know, set it right and look back.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Very cool. What's your opinion of Ouija boards?
Oh, they're awesome. It's a really cool piece of Americana. The Ouija board goes back to 1891 in a little town called Baltimore, Maryland, and it was a product of the Kennard Novelty Company. They made this board, a game. They weren't the first. It's a talking board is the generic term. Mm-hmm. But Ouija is a brand name. It's just like someone would say, make me a Xerox copy. Your Xerox is a brand name. You're actually talking about a photocopy. So Ouija comes around, and it's wildly popular. It was on the cover of the Saturday Evening Post once in 1920, a Norman Rockwell painting. And it's this fun thing that's very enigmatic. You know, is it dark? Are we really talking to dead people? Is it just a game? And then it starts to get a dark reputation in the 1970s because a guy named William Peter Blatty wrote a great book called The Exorcist, which was turned into a really frightening movie mm-hmm. of the same name. And since that time, the reputation's just gotten darker and darker. And I know it's really a polarizing thing in the paranormal community. Oh, these things are portals. They open doorways to something that you don't know what's on the other side. And I'm not going to disagree with that, but I also think that If you're invoking spirits in any way, whether it's let's do EVP or try to capture electronic voice phenomena, or let's talk to these K2 EMF meters and see if the ghost will communicate that way, or hold a pendulum, or anything else, it's really all the same mechanics. You're asking something over there to come to where you are and communicate. So I don't think a Ouija board is any more or less dangerous than anything else. Mm-hmm. It's either all dangerous or... You know, it's something else, but beyond that, it's a great piece of American story, and it's still around today. 1967, it outsold Monopoly. You know, it's available in toy stores everywhere, and it's just you know, I used one as a kid too. It had a big part in getting me interested.
I've had guests on that utilize Ouija boards or have. One of the guests I had on was Darren Evans, and he had an encounter with an entity named it Zozo.
Okay.
And apparently there's a movie in the works and some other stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty negative stuff. And he's pretty serious about this. And he helps folks out that have encountered it also. And apparently he's not the only one.
Yeah, no, I know some people just swear up and down, but that's not a really well thought out position. You can either say it's all dangerous, don't communicate with spirits because you don't know what you're going to get. That I respect. Or you can say, well, this method works better for me than that method. That's fine too. But just to single one method out and say that's dangerous, everything else is safe, it's just not a well thought out position.
Right. Well, he offers, you know, actually when he was on the show, a teenager had called in because he had the experience while using a board with some friends. And he was given advice over the air and stuff. And it sounded like pretty good advice to me, you know. And, you know, he was just he just tries to tell folks that, you know, this is pretty serious. Don't antagonize, you know, don't provoke it, that kind of thing. And you know, if you're provoking, obviously that's where the problem comes from.
Well, anger probably begets anger. But did you say it led to a movie deal for him?
I'm not sure of all the details. I do know through correspondence that he has been had been working on it for several months, and apparently it's just waiting to be put out. I'm not sure of all the details.
Well, there's an incentive, isn't it? Don't use Ouija boards. You'll get your own movie deal.
you might be interested to check it out. Just you just have to Google Zozo, and you'll Darren Evans is his name. And actually, there's an episode in my archives that I'll send you a link to that you can check out what he has to say about it.
Sure. No. I mean, you know, like I said, it's an interesting piece of Americana, and you know, I know a lot of people think they're dangerous, but you know, just think it through, folks. It's either all dangerous or
right.
or one or the other. You can't have it all. You can't have it both ways.
Well, I do make Ouija boards. I don't use them. I just make them.
Cool.
Yeah,
why
I don't
not?
Make a. I don't make a whole lot of them, like a you know, a thing. But I just do it. And
well, you and Hasbro, you know. I mean, you know, be careful. They'll come after you. But no, I'm kidding. There's tons of it. And this is the other thing too. Ouija was not the only commercial board, and not the only one that's still out there right now. There's tons of them out there. Just like, you know, tarot cards, there's so many different kinds of decks beyond the Rider-Waite. It's, and it's all an it's all an expression of spirituality. People like tinkering with this stuff. We always have for centuries and centuries and millennia and millennia. So why not make them yourself? I love it.
Yeah, I think they're interesting to look at, and they certainly are interesting to talk about. I've never used one. I may have as a kid, but I don't remember it, and I don't remember ever having an experience, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's probably the demon talking.
Well, I wanted you to talk about your new book, if you could. It's not so much paranormal, but if you can, I'm not sure if it's possible, but is it okay you talk about what it's like?
Yeah, anything you want, sure.
So I'll go ahead and have at it. Let folks know what that book's all about.
This is my very first non-paranormal book, although that's even up for debate. The it's another book for ages 9 and up, and the whole concept is I wanted to talk to people that have done extraordinary things that I will most likely never get to experience. So, for example, I interviewed someone who was struck by lightning, and I interviewed Sandy Magnus, who went up in the space shuttle as an astronaut. And I interviewed Dean Karnazes, who ran 50 marathons in 50 states in 50 consecutive days, mm-hmm. which if that's not paranormal, then God knows what is. That's certainly beyond the realm of normal. And just really try to get to what makes these people tick, what makes them do this, or people who have survived incredible odds. I interviewed Tammy Ashcraft, who was lost at sea for 2 months on a yacht after she and her fiancé were sailing it from Tahiti over to San Diego and ran into a Category 4 hurricane. The ship capsized, rolled over. Her fiancé was thrown overboard, lost at sea, killed. And she wakes up 24 hours later, no engine, no mast, no sail. Mm-hmm. The radio shorted out. And it's these are people that, you know, lesser folks would have called it quits, and that would have been that. And just really amazing people that say, you know, I'm going to survive. I'm making a conscious decision to survive, or I'm going to climb the highest mountain. I talked to Mark Inglis, who climbed Mount Everest. And sure, lots of people have climbed Mount Everest, but Mark Inglis is the only guy to ever have done it without legs. He's got two artificial legs and still was able to climb Everest. And just these stories that, inspire us and make us, you know, wonder, well, what else is possible? You know, these are people that don't know the meaning of the word can't. And I set out really just as a freak show isn't quite the word, but, you know, it started off as like, well, what's neat stuff that most of us don't get to do? And I kind of realized along the way that these are really inspirational folks that changed their lives and have inspired millions of others collectively to go do great things.
And you also interviewed the woman that lost her arm in a shark attack.
Yeah, gosh, how could I forget? Bethany Hamilton. She just has a movie that came out, Soul Surfer. It's in theaters right now. You know, and what's amazing about Bethany is she's this kid that just got her first surfing sponsor, and she goes out, you know, to it was Halloween day, and she goes out surfing, and a shark tears her arm off. And something like 29 days later or 30 days later, from getting her arm ripped off and getting it, you know, getting her a stump, you know, surgically repaired and getting a clean bill of health, she's out surfing again. And not only that, she goes on to win national titles all after getting her arm chewed off. So no matter what hand you're dealt, you can still rise to the highest levels, which I think is just so important to know, because we all have issues in our lives. And some people say, oh, man, you know, this stinks. My car needs repair, and now right. I'm out of money, so what am I going to do? Well, Bethany's arm was ripped off, and she still went on to win national surfing titles. So get over it. Fix your car, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the message that people like Bethany bring to us, is that you can play any hand you're dealt and still win, but it's all about attitude, faith, determination, and belief in yourself above all else.
Yeah, that's an excellent story. And you interviewed her before they did the movie, right?
Oh, yeah. This was a couple of years ago. They were just starting to work on the movie when I talked to her.
Is she still surfing now?
Absolutely. In fact, she just competed in Australia, I want to say, last week.
Wow.
I don't think she did so well in this particular one, but I have no doubt she will come back and be kicking butt somewhere else shortly.
Honestly, I really do not know what I would do after that. I think I would probably have a problem with water, you know?
Yeah, and she said too, you know, as she's going into shore, losing a ton of blood, her biggest thought is, I'm going to lose my surfing sponsor over this. Oh my gosh, you know, what do I do? She put her faith in God. She believes that's really the biggest force that got her through. And she did. She survived, she prevailed, and thrived. And that is what... That I think is the best part of the story, is that most of her success came after losing her arm to a shark, not before.
Oh man, that's crazy. Oof, it just makes me I just watched too the other night the Shark Men, I think it's called.
Okay.
These guys, they actually catch sharks so that they can tag them and release them. You know, they don't harm them in any way. But they get up close and they show their mouths and all this other stuff. And it's like, man, you guys are crazy. Sticking your hands right in there.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I mean, there's always someone that overcomes, that overcomes some obstacle or goes in where other people are afraid. And I think that's part of the allure of any subject, whether it's paranormal or, endurance, like running, you know, 50 marathons consecutively, and whatever it is, I think all of us have this urge to be the best at something, to go into places where others fear to tread, because when you do that, you grow as a person, you become a better person for it, and you get a damn good story to tell, and I think that's the best part.
Awesome. Thank you for that. And the name of that book is What It's Like.
That's right.
Before we have to go here shortly, but before we go, I want to get your opinion on the year 2012 and what it means to you.
It means it's right after 2011 and right before 2013.
But what about December 21st?
I have plans that night, so if you're asking me to come back on the show, I'm throwing a party that is going to go way into the wee hours. Maybe a live broadcast if you want.
Thank you.
There'll be beer.
Ooh.
But you know what's funny? There's Family Talk Radio, which is a kind of a hate-filled preacher man that's been on the radio for years and years and years and quite judgmental, very elderly now. He says the world's going to end May 21st. That would be in 19 days. So you know, we got to survive that first, and then we can talk about the Mayan prophecy and the calendar running out.
Oh, he's saying that somebody got the calculation wrong, eh?
No, he's saying that he's read the Bible, and the Bible code reveals that the end of days begins May 21st of this year, in 19 days from now. And, you know, I listened to his broadcast where he went through all the signs, and the world is always need to always, I think humanity always needs to be close to the end of days, or at least think it is. Remember 2000, you know, Y2K? It keeps us in check in some weird, strange way. But this guy, you know, it's pretty tough when you put a specific date like that. There's a billboard in the next town over for me that tells everybody, hey, you know, Judgment Day is May 21st. Oh, my gosh. You know? So
that should come down.
May 22nd, I'm going to definitely give him a call and give him a raspberry or something.
Well, I forgot what I was going to say. I have heard the I heard a different prediction, and I thought it was, you know, earlier in 2012, earlier in the year. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, we always have needed to believe that we're close to the brink, and the Mayan calendar is really interesting. It's if you look at it, it's a series of cycles, and the Mayans believe that the world was going to end about every 55 years. And they would hold sacrifices, and then that would mark the halfway through this other thing. And so this calendar is just a big culmination that marks the end of a giant cycle. But just like our calendar, December 31st ends, the world doesn't end, then you go back to the beginning, January 1st. Mm-hmm. I happen to believe the Mayan calendar is the same. It doesn't run out, it's a cycle. It starts over at that point. Just like our calendar runs out every December 31st. But if I'm wrong, I owe you a Coke.
How about a Pepsi Max?
Either way, you got it.
I'll take a Pepsi Max any day.
If we all die, I owe you a Pepsi Max. Good luck collecting it.
Right. You mentioned Y2K, and I, for some reason, I don't remember worrying about anything other than my computer not being able to set its date.
Yeah, but don't you remember people saying airplanes were going to fall out of the sky? Don't be in an elevator at that time. You're going to lose all your money at the bank.
I think all I did was think it was a joke at the time. I don't remember any, you know, planetary alignment or the vibrations of everybody's subconscious is going to come into click, and all. Nothing was talked like that. Now, it is nowadays.
This was much more tangible. Our computers are going to crash and kill us. Yeah. That's believable. You know,
yeah, like, we'd be lost.
That we could buy into. So, but we somehow came out of that.
Well, Jeff, I appreciate you being on the show. I want you to take a couple of minutes to give your shout outs and promote anything you want to, your website, your books. Go ahead and have at it.
Well, I appreciate it. No, thanks for having me on. You know, you can always find me at ghostvillage.com, or you can check out 30 odd minutes. And I love talking about this subject. I think it's just it's something that binds us all to each other, and it's the big questions. You know, is there life after death? Are we alone in the universe? Do we know every creature that walks the earth with us? That's fun. That's the stuff that keeps me up at night thinking. You know, what more is out there? What more can we learn? And so it's just awesome to be on this journey with so many other like-minded people that I get to correspond with and meet at events. And you know, we all have something to add to that discussion, everybody, whether it's your first day doing it or you've been doing it for years. And my sincere hope is that people won't take anyone's word for it but their own, and just get out there and start asking the big questions for themselves.
And your books are available?
Yeah, you can check them out on Amazon.com. They're all there. You can go to my website or go to Ghost Village. You can find me anywhere, Google. And, you know, I'd love to hear from people.
Great. I really appreciate you being here, and I wish you luck and success with your new book and all good things.
Thank you, Robbie. Appreciate it.
I will certainly send you a link on the on where to get the show. It'll be archived, and you can catch the few things at the beginning there that you couldn't hear. But otherwise, it'll be there for download for anybody to use, and you can use it, post on your sites or whatever.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate the things you do. You have a great perspective, and you have your head on right, and you know, you don't seem to be... Go ahead.
You think so? I appreciate that. That's, you're the first person to say that.
I have my doubts. You're a good guy, and everything you're doing seems to be, you seem to be doing it the right way, and I hope it catches on and becomes a world phenomenon.
Well, you never know, but you know, everything's got to start somewhere, so why not here tonight?
All right. All right, Jeff, you have a great night, and I'll cut you loose, and I will be in touch via email.
Sounds great. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, folks, I'm going to go. Next week, we're going to be talking about, indeed, about Edgar Cayce and some other stuff with my special guest. Tune in, 7 p.m. Eastern time. That's Eastern time, like if you live in the eastern part of the country. I actually am in Cincinnati. That's not the eastern part of the country, but it is on Eastern time zone. And 7 o'clock to 8:30. Check it out. Be there or, you know, be without. Check it out. Goodbye.
Can switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on your car insurance? Does the Gut and Bone Show rock?
Rock, rock.
Come on!
You're listening to the Gut and Bone Show on TenacityRadio.com. Real entertainment.
Come on!
No excuses.
Hey, how you doing there, sweetie? Yeah, check it out. Hey, give me a second. I gotta talk to you. Hey, you keep it down. Hey, folks, how you doing there? Yeah, I wanted to share something with you. You know, I've been checking out the latest shows at TenacityRadio.com, and one of my favorite shows is The Gut and Bone Show. I've recently found out that I can get that show on my... Hey, knock it off! On my phone. That's right. Stitcher.com has an app for your Palm Pre, your BlackBerry, your Android phone, and your iPhone. Go on down to Stitcher.com and get yourself the app. Download it free today at Stitcher.com.
Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting rabbits.
It'll take him all day to figure this one out.
Rat.